The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today, in the top story, it is the inside story of Judd's World. From milking cows to fighting the IRS, Judd Ammons and his family has built a real estate empire in the Triangle. Also, we have stories coming from Florida firms, love for the Triangle, and on the beat. First, we're going to start with the cover story. Ammons, family values. From Mars Hill to Raleigh, Judd Ammons and his family continue to expand their real estate footprint. Before there was Heritage, Wakefield, Traditions, or other big housing developments around Wake Forest and northern Wake County, there were farms where cows grazed and where tobacco and other crops were harvested. Emmett Marshall and his family had amassed more than 1,000 acres of their own just outside of Wake Forest, tending to a herd of about 900 dairy cows and various crops, when one day, Justice Judd Ammons, a Raleigh home builder, drove up to their farm. He said to me, "I don't sell to none of those people from Raleigh," Ammons remembers. Instead of getting back in his truck and driving back home, Ammons took a seat outside the milk house. A while later, after Marshall came out with a couple of buckets of milk, the phone rang. While the farmer took his call, Ammons, who grew up on a farm outside Mars Hill in the North Carolina mountains, took the milk buckets and started feeding the calves in the pen. When Marshall came back outside and saw that Ammons had done what he had done, he invited him to stay for lunch. "I bought 1,800 acres that day, or at least made the deal for it," Ammons says. According to records, he paid Marshall in 1985 about $5,440 per acre, or $3.5 million for the first 640 acres of what would become the 2,600-acre Heritage Development, home to about 3,000 families and an 18-hole golf course. Ammons' folksy personal style has been a hallmark of a career that has stretched across the decades in the rugged world of real estate. He and his family have built hundreds of homes and developed projects on some of the Triangle's largest swaths of land, helping redefine a region that became one of the South's economic engines. And while the Triangle has changed, he has not, still toiling behind the same desk, in the same house, and with the same resolve. His career has been marked, too, by a keen sense of where the Triangle is headed and the boldness to act on those beliefs. And while Ammons is now 81, his four children are all still deeply involved in shaping the future of the Triangle, securing the Ammons development prowess for years to come. Judd Ammons wouldn't be the one to go on to build out that land he bought from the dairy farmer, but he was one of the foresight. He was the one with the foresight to know those rolling farmlands will one day change. It was eventually developed starting in 2000 by his son Andy, who has won numerous accolades from home builder groups in the Triangle for his work at Heritage. Another Ammons son, David, picked up the mantle for another of his father's ideas, the $54 million Springmoor Retirement Community in North Raleigh. Also in the family, son Jeff followed his father into the trade by building houses and the factory sports and entertainment complex in Wake Forest. And daughter Alma is spearheading the $3.5 million plan for the new Joe Ellen Ammons Welcome Center at Meredith College, a tribute to their late mother and a longtime Meredith trustee. Altogether, the Ammons family has had a hand in the development and construction of more than 5,600 new homes and commercial buildings across Wake County and the North Carolina coastline in the nearly 50 years since Judd and Joe Ellen built their first home on Ammons Drive in North Raleigh. Their projects, though not all without some controversy or dispute with neighbors, environmental concerns, or the Internal Revenue Service, have provided jobs at industrial plants built on land Ammons developed in East Raleigh and in Wilmington. provided homes and services for people of varying income levels from the mountains to the coast, and introduced new ideas for improving the Triangle community. When Judd Ammons started building affordable housing in East Raleigh and middle-income communities in North Raleigh, it was before the big building companies realized Raleigh's population boom was coming in the 1970s and 80s. That was not long after IBM began moving thousands of workers from New York and the Northeast to its facility at Research Triangle Park. And many of them settled in new neighborhoods underway at North Hills, North Ridge, and Greystone Village. Jo Ellen Ammons, Judd's wife, made friends with many of the transfers through her volunteer work at the school PTA, helping sell them homes in Ammons neighborhoods at Lake Park, Hidden Valley 2, and later Greystone, often grouping families coming from the same region on the same streets together. And she'd stay in touch with them, so in 6 years, when they'd be ready to buy another house, she'd be there, according to their daughter, Alma Hoffman. To my mom, it was all very personal. She really wanted to know people and really became their best friend. She had a million best friends. Judd Ammons was also one of the first Raleigh leaders to spearhead a plan for greenways that would connect neighborhoods across the triangle. And he was the first developer to systematically plan an entire community of 830 homes, shopping center, amenity centers, and a retirement community for Greystone Village, Raleigh's first planned unit development in the 1980s. It really is remarkable how much he's accomplished out of his living room, says Mason Williams, a Raleigh real estate investor who worked for Judd for close to 20 years and to whom he remains friends. Ammons still conducts all his business from a home office bestrewed with trophies won for his champion beagles, map drawings for real estate projects, and family photographs. But no computer. A word of warning. Posted at his desk. Let me do all the talking. It saves time. Well, it's true, Ammons says of the wall sign. Being in our business is having the nerve. It isn't having any sense. For the Ammons kids, Ammons Construction Company and Ammons Inc. was an extension of the family. Judd's home office was always down the hall, and visitors were always knocking at the door. Jo Ellen usually had a batch of fresh biscuits ready by 7 a.m. for whomever was stopping by. Andy, David, Alma, and Jeff were expected to help at the construction sites during the summers and often after school. One of Andy's first jobs was a lifeguard at the Lake Park Swim Club that Judd helped build. Before Jeff, the youngest, was old enough for school, he would ride along with Judd to check on contractors at his construction sites. Alma's role, she says, was sweeping out the new houses, and when she was old enough to drive, she would courier bank deposits or deliver permit applications downtown. There was this one house my dad was building across the street from Raleigh's Martin Middle School. I was probably 10 or 12, and he dropped me off to sweep the floors. She says, well, there was a floor vent there that hadn't been covered, and I fell in it and got stuck all the way to my thighs. I had to sit there for 3 hours until somebody came back to get me. I couldn't get out. But we all enjoyed it, she says, of their part in the family business. It was just what you did. It wasn't a negative. There were also tough times in the household, some of which Judd Ammons details in an autobiography published in 2000. Funding for construction dried up during the savings and loan crisis in the late 1980s, stressing many in the industry. Two of Judd's close friends in the building business committed suicide. An asphalt company he started with a partner never panned out and only lost money. My dad always had a saying, tough times never last, but tough people do, Alma relays. In the book, he also tells his side of what, at one point, was a more than $10 million dispute with the IRS that went on for about 12 years before it was settled in 1997. I finally wound up paying 2.75% of the tax and penalties that were assessed against me. That was money that I'll get back at a later date, he wrote in a book. but it cost me much more than 2.75% in paying the people that helped me and lost deals and stress on my family. It really affects people's lives. It was during that time that he says he has to pass on several property deals he'd been bidding for, including land that now makes up part of Briar Creek in Raleigh, because his bankers were reluctant to lend the money until his IRS case was resolved. Then in 2013, Jo Ellen, his wife of more than 55 years and his partner in every project, was diagnosed with leukemia. She went through nearly a year of chemotherapy and treatment before she died in 2014. Judd Ammons says he never expected his children to take an interest in real estate. Both Andy and Jeff earn engineering degrees, like Judd, from NC State University, and like Judd, worked for big corporations before starting their own companies. Judd Ammons had worked for several years as a director of agriculture for CP&L, now Duke Energy, before starting his home building business in 1970. Andy Ammons worked for a big general contracting firm in Florida before returning to North Carolina. He had interviewed for a job with a Durham housing developer when Judd Ammons convinced Andy Ammons to instead help him kickstart a project in Wilmington and later another project at Nag's Head. Jeff Ammons went to work for an environmental engineering firm in Raleigh before quitting to start Ammons Building Company, which has built both residential and commercial buildings across the region, including the renovations for the Jo Ellen Ammons Welcome Center at Meredith. David Ammons' integration into the business had a surprising twist. For a class at Wake Forest University, he had volunteered at a local retirement community to learn about different management styles. In a conversation with his father at Thanksgiving on a drive back from his younger brother's soccer tournament, David mentioned what he had been studying. And he literally turned to my mom in the back seat and said, "I know he's kidding. I know you made him mention that," David remembers, because they had just started talking about building Springmore. The Springmore Life Care Retirement Community in North Raleigh was the first continuing care retirement community to open in the region, and David Ammons was one of its management company's first employees. He is now owner and principal of Retirement Living Associates, Inc., which manages five retirement communities, including Springmore. "I didn't ever want them to work for just me," Judd Ammons says. "I can have a very bad temper and have them hate me before we get started." Even Alma Hoffman, a former school teacher, couldn't stay away from the influences of her dad's business sense. After she worked in schools for several years, Hoffman started her own company, publishing and selling books to teachers and school districts to help students with their writing skills. Later, she started several summer camp programs focused on science and writing, and also bought an interest in a couple of office buildings in North Raleigh. Hoffman has lately been spearheading the family's involvement in the Jo Ellen Ammons Welcome Center project, where her mother was a Meredith trustee and volunteer for years. The Ammons $3.5 million gift to the school in 2015 was the largest gift in the school's history and is being used to renovate the landmark Johnson Hall, the same building where Judd and Jo Ellen first met for a blind date when in college. The first floor will become a more elaborate welcome center, housing the school's admissions, financial assistance registrar, and business office, and serving as a first impression for new visitors. It is the perfect combination of her spirit and her life at Meredith, and we're touched that the Ammons family wanted to honor her here, says Meredith President Jo Ellen. The dedication is October 19th. The Ammons name is also on the Indoor Recreation Center at the Salvation Army's Center of Hope on Capitol Boulevard, where David Ammons serves on the advisory board, and the family has been longtime supporters of NC State University. Judd Ammons is also a longtime benefactor at Mars Hill University. "My dad, if he's going to give money, he wants to know where it's going and that it's going to do something to help people. He's not a big fan of just giving money. Alma Hoffman says, the Jandy Ammons Foundation, set up in 2012 by Andy Ammons and his wife, Jan, follows a similar objective in their focus to enhance wildlife habitats, support church mission trips, and educational surroundings. The couple meets with all grant applicants and volunteers where they can. What's left of the companies that Judd Ammons built is beginning to scatter. He has divided out much of the land he still owned in Wake Forest near the reservoir to each of the four children, some of which has already been sold for the development of the new traditions at Wake Forest Community. David Ammons' company is planning to build a retirement community on his part of the Wake Forest property on Oak Grove Church Road, but no date has been set yet for construction. It's not often that the siblings' projects overlap, but when they do, there's not usually any special treatment. Jeff Ammons says, Andy Ammons paid for all the land he needed from Judd Ammons for the Heritage Project in Wake Forest, and Andy sold several of his developed lots to Jeff to build new houses. There were no side deals, Jeff says. Everything's fair. Andy says he's now working on rounding out construction at Heritage, a 2,600-acre project he has been developing for 15 years and is not seeking more land to buy. I have people I've spent years talking to now calling me up ready to sell. Well, I'm not starting anything new, he says. I'm finishing what I got. He and Jan even sold part of their ownership in the Heritage Golf Club in July to a golf course management company from Virginia, but remain active owners. Jeff Ammons, though, is capitalizing on the Triangle's growing sports market. After selling his ownership in the retail, sport, and entertainment complex at the factory in Wake Forest. In 2015, a deal valued at $18 million, he acquired the Raleigh Center Ice Training Complex on Hodges Street for nearly $3 million. He is also finalizing plans for the new 30-acre indoor and outdoor weight competition center on Aviation Parkway in Mooresville, which will have ice skating rinks, turf soccer fields, and championship-level volleyball and gymnastic facilities. The estimated $15 million project, which has already been awarded a $3 million tourism grant from the county, is expected to break ground in early 2017. But when a banker friend recently asked Judd Ammons advice about financing a loan to Jeff for the weight competition facility, Ammons told the banker he thought the idea was crazy as hell. So he said, you're saying you don't want us to make him a loan? And I said, no, you used to think I was crazy as hell. And I'm your best customer. You like people like that, I thought, Judd says. He said, okay, we'll do it then. And as Judd always likes to say, don't wish you had, be glad you did. And looking at the Ammons family tree, we have Judd Ammons, age 81, family, the late Joe Ellen Ammons, who died in 2014, four children and 13 grandchildren. Ammons Construction Company, Inc., 1970, a home building company mostly active from 1970 to 1984. Ammons, Inc., 1974, a residential land development company. Ammons East Corp., 1986, an industrial land development company. Ammons Springmore Associates, LLC, 1996, owner of the land and buildings for Springmore Life Care Retirement Community. Ammons Pittman, Inc., 1979, a full-service real estate management firm. We're looking at Andy Ammons, age 56. Family, he has a wife, Jan, three children, has Ammons Development Group, Inc., 1998, and Residential Land Development Company, Franklin Village, LLC, 1998, a real estate land holding company for forestry and timber management. The Heritage Club, Inc., 2000, a membership recreation club. The Heritage Club Properties, 2013, ownership of the Heritage Golf Club in Wake Forest. The Jandy Ammons Foundation, Inc., 2012, nonprofit grant foundation. David Ammons, age 53, has a wife, Lee, two children, Retirement Living Associates, Inc., 1990, a management and development firm of senior living communities, Ammon Springmore Associates, Inc., in 1996, owner of the land and buildings for Springmore Retirement Community in Raleigh, Springshire Retirement LLC, 2004, management firm for retirement community in Greenville, Triangle Retirement Investment LLC, 2010, real estate investment entity with Prentice Baker, and Alma Ammons Hoffman, 51, has a husband, John Hoffman, and have four children, Wright More Education Resources, LLC, 2006, Educational Writing Resources. It dissolved in 2015. Hoffman Properties of Raleigh, LLC, 1999, Real Estate Ownership. Raleigh Strength and Fitness, LLC, 2011, Personal Training and Gym Program operated by John Hoffman. And Jeff Ammons, age 45, wife Beth, four children, Ammons Building Corp, 1995, a residential and commercial building contractor, The Factory, LLC, 2003, owner and developer of retail and entertainment complex in Wake Forest. It dissolved in 2016, however. ACC Development Company, Inc., 2013, commercial land development firm. Ammons Ventures, LLC, 2016, ownership of Raleigh Center Ice Training Complex. And taking a look at the Ammons family notable projects, here's a list of some of the projects by the Ammons family. Greystone Village, 830-home residential and commercial development that was the first planned unit development approved in Raleigh. In 1986, the project was valued at around $200 million, or about $430 million in today's dollars. It's located in North Raleigh along Sawmill and Lead Mine Roads. It was built between 1981 through 1999. North Chase is a residential development industrial park with about 1,500 homes and 250-acre industrial park. It's located in North Wilmington, when built mid-1980s through the mid-1990s. Springmore Life Care Retirement Community, Raleigh's first continuing care retirement community with independent living and skilled nurse care units for about 580 residents. Located at Sawmill Road in Raleigh, and it was built in 1984. Village at Nag's Head is 385-acre coastal resort and golf course community. Nag's Head at the Outer Banks is where it's located, and it was built in the early 1990s. East Park, a 600-acre industrial park with warehouse, flex, and industrial buildings for companies like the Anginomato North America Chemical Company and Gray Bar, an electrical products supplier, is located on Poole and New Hope Church Roads in East Raleigh. It began selling lots in 1988. Ammon still owns about 10 acres. Heritage, a 2,600-acre residential and commercial development with more than 35 neighborhoods, amenity centers, and an 18-hole semi-private golf course. It's in Wake Forest, and it was built between 2000 and 2016. And finally, The Factory, a 200,000-square-foot sports, entertainment, and retail facility on 36 acres that includes two ice rinks, an indoor soccer facility, a YMCA fitness gym, six baseball and softball fields, and several restaurants and retailers. Located at 1839 South Main Street in Wake Forest, it was built. The building was purchased in 2003 for $4 million, redeveloped and sold in 2015 for $17.85 million. Turning now to the executive voice. Casey Cummings, Florida firm continues aggressive push in North Carolina. It's a Q&A. Casey Cummings and the Florida real estate company he leads, Ram Realty Services, may not be based in North Carolina, but the company has been so active across the state for the past 17 years that it sort of feels like it. Ram, the successor to a company that Cummings' father, Peter Cummings, started in 1978, made its first major investment in the Triangle in 1999 with the purchase of a property near Briar Creek in Raleigh, which was later sold for a pretty profit, augmenting its interest in the region. Ram has been pruning and planting real estate assets in the region ever since. The dynamics of the Triangle and Charlotte are quite remarkable, he says. We feel it's a great place to put capital, but I'm glad we started 20 years ago and not now. In 2013, Ram opened the new 140 West Franklin condo and retail building in Chapel Hill, and in August acquired the Village Plaza retail building here. The company is also building a 263-unit luxury apartment community on Irwin Road in Durham that's expected to open in summer 2017. First question, why have you and your investors chosen this region for so much of your focus these last few years? Cummings says, both the Charlotte and Triangle markets have experienced significant growth in the last few decades. Growth both jobs and population drives demand for apartments and shopping centers. The decision to expand our focus outside of Florida and into North Carolina was driven by these dynamics. And more importantly, we have a great team that likes living, working, and raising their families here in North Carolina. What have your profit margins looked like? Our margins, or returns as we typically measure performance, vary based on the risks we are taking, timing, and our ability to execute on the investment strategy. North Carolina has performed extremely well on all fronts. Compared to other parts of the Southeast, how competitive is the real estate investment market in the Triangle? It's hard to find good deals in just about every market where we want to invest. In addition to Charlotte and the Triangle, we focus on the major markets in Florida, as well as Nashville and Atlanta. All of the markets are competitive. However, the North Carolina market seems to have garnered heightened attention from institutional investors in the last 5 years. Do you have any investors contributing to your funds who are from the Triangle or from North Carolina? Yes, we have a variety of high net worth private investors, as well as institutions, both private and public, domestic and international. Is it just a coincidence that the company is named Ram Realty and so many of your investments in the Triangle have been focused on the hometown of UNC Chapel Hill? Yes, although I love Chapel Hill. Can you give a rundown of the projects you have planned or are underway in Triangle and in Charlotte? We currently own approximately 1,100 multifamily units and 400,000 square feet of commercial space in North Carolina. We have an additional 500 units under active development and another 750 in the pipeline. In the aggregate, this equates to approximately $500 million of a total capital investment. In addition to the properties we currently own, Pavilion East in Durham, I-40 West Franklin, and Village Plaza in Chapel Hill, Design Center of the Carolinas, Midtown 205, and Rock Creek at Ballantyne Commons in Charlotte, we are under construction at our new property in Durham on Irwin Road and recently closed on a mixed-use development site in Noda, Charlotte. Village Plaza in Chapel Hill was your most recent acquisition in Chapel Hill. Are there any plans to renovate, expand, or redevelop this property? We are actively working on the design and marketing of a significant renovation and expansion of the property. There will be more exciting news to announce shortly. We have been aggressively pursuing opportunities in the Ifias Fordham District for some time and believe that the recently adopted zoning changes will help spur additional high-quality redevelopment in the area. How did you first get involved in this company? My father, Peter Cummings, founded the company in 1978. I am the fourth generation in my family to choose real estate as a career. In other words, it's in my blood. I didn't set out to join the family business, but wound up with a passion for it after starting my own employment and cleaning business while I was in college. How often do you usually visit your people and properties in North Carolina? I have four partners that run the business with me, and each of us are here at least once a month. A closer look on Casey Cummings. He's 47. the CEO of Ram Realty Services. His hometown is living in Stuart, Florida, and he was born in Montreal. Education, has a BS from Boston University. His first job growing up, cleaning offices and restaurants at night. Taking a look at the Reader's Guide coming up next week, September 23rd, the highest paid occupations, women-owned businesses. September 30th, largest privately held entities. October 7th, physician groups, assisted living facilities, CCRCs. October 14th, performing arts organizations, downtown Raleigh restaurants. Looking at next week, Fanatics CEO Tony Addy. Executive voice Tony Addy. Fanatics CEO Tony Addy is celebrating with the addition of $20 million of funding in September. Durham-based Fanatics total haul increases to more than $120 million, and Addy already has its earmarked for both new hires and for the continued push out of its cooling and heating technology. Innovation, he says, will transform everything from refrigerators to medical-grade cold storage devices. Addy has a team of about 110 employees. Taking a glance in the biz section, major Raleigh decision on Six Forks Road ahead. If you've sat in traffic on Six Forks Road in Raleigh, and thousands of us have, you know it can get jammed. And Raleigh faces a key decision about the stretch from Lynn Road to North Hills. Right now, 48,000 vehicles per day travel on Six Forks near the Beltline and 3,600 per day at Lynn Road. City planners pitched expanding Six Forks to six lanes at a cost of around $44 million, but some city council members raised concerns last spring. Now planners are looking at a four-lane option that probably would include medians and paths for cyclists. The extended street scraping would be safer and more attractive, but would not include more lanes, says Carter Pettibone, urban planner for the city. Four lanes could present a real traffic challenge going forward as the rising number of cars pushing through the same funnel. Eric Lamb, the city's transportation planning manager, says 36,000 vehicles per day is pushing the limits of what four-lane roads can do. He adds, if we did the streetscape solution, it would not appreciably improve traffic in the corridor above what is there today. Ultimately, that's the city's council's call. Lamb expects city planners to get feedback from the public in the coming months and have a revised plan for city council to review by the spring. The investors see opportunities. Shah's Capital CEO Hamanasu Shah was strutting his stuff September 10th at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, where the firm celebrated its 10th anniversary. The lead executive of the Raleigh-based investment firm spoke in front of some of his trusted investors about the opportunities and the headwinds circling the global economy. Shah, now managing some $260 million in assets, spoke about the healthy returns in 2016, but cautioned about the warning signs he sees on the horizons. Innovation across many sectors, including healthcare, hospitality, and manufacturing, will challenge some traditional businesses and industries, Shah says. That will create new opportunities for us. After all, we don't chase momentums. In the Hall of Fame, new class includes GAFs, a Raleigh Gov. So how many Raleigh natives have even served as governor of North Carolina? If you guessed one, you are correct. J. Melvin Broughton, governor from 1941 to 1945, will be honored October 30th at the 2016 Raleigh Hall of Fame ceremony at the Raleigh Convention Center. Also being inducted are Dr. Bill D. Brittain, who launched Lutheran Family Services, Jill Staten Bullard, co-founder of the Interfaith Food Shuttle, Mary Josephine Conrad Cressymore, a longtime volunteer, Dr. Ann McLaurin, a physician and former school board member, J.C. Ralston, a former faculty member at NC State University, Old Temple Sloan Jr., the founder of CarQuest Auto Parts, and California Wimberly, an educator and activist. Bank on it. NC Bank History is a good read, really. So if Biz told you, go read this book about the history of North Carolina banking, you think, yawn. But seriously, A New Look by Luther Hodges Jr. draws a fascinating parallel between the state's success and the rise of its banks. And Hodges, the son of a North Carolina governor, should know. He was one of the young bankers at NCNB before it became Bank of America, and a close friend of Hugh McCall. In Banknotes, an inside look at the launching of North Carolina's banking ascendancy, Hodges says the state's banks seceded because the state lacked a division between urban and rural. Most of the state's population was outside the major cities, so there was no widespread mistrust of cities and banks like in other states. State regulations were a little more liberal, and it created an opportunity for management to do things. That opportunity arrived, and a few decades ago, with the rise of interstate banking, NCNB and First Union exploded past vulnerable Wachovia in North Carolina, and then rapidly expanded into other states. We won, so to speak, Hodges says. Hodges now believes banks are vastly overregulated. The government is running the business and has scared small business and other businesses from investing because the regulations are so strident, he says, is very costly. Duke course honored. The Duke University golf course get raised reviews from Golf Week. Duke ranked ahead of UNC, but still trails Yale. Congratulations to the Duke University Golf Club at the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club. The Robert Trent Jones Design Golf Course was recently ranked 13 nationally among campus golf courses by Golf Week. The course moved up two spots from a year ago. The Finley Golf Course at UNC Chapel Hill was ranked number 23. In the course at Yale, built in 1923, was ranked still number one. In the real estate section, Raleigh to get a taste of New York. Trish and John Healy of Hyde Street Holdings in Raleigh has spent the better part of the past 3 years assembling the land and perfecting the drawings, plans, and details for what will be the couple's first for sale project in downtown Raleigh. All that work is now coming to fruition as construction crews have already started clearing the property at 401 East Harriet Street at the crossroads with South Bloodworth Street. The entire assemblage will encompass 19 units in four buildings, each designed to resemble a Manhattan-style brownstone. Each of the unit owners, Trish Healy says, will have access to their own rooftop terrace with views of the downtown Raleigh skyline, plus a deck and a courtyard, altogether about 900 square feet of outdoor space. John and I very much believe in urban infill and a mix of uses, and that also means a mix of housing uses. Trish Healy says, noting that they hope it will be the first of more projects like this in the downtown district. Our dream was that 20 years from now, someone would think they've always been there. The Healys, better known for their involvement in for-rent properties like the Lincoln Apartments near Moore Square, say they just wanted to make sure this project hit all the high notes. Their project team, which includes Raleigh builder Greg Paul Builders, architect Jeff Davis, designer Kim Shirley, and the sales and marketing staff at Farmville Morrissey Barefoot New Homes, will launch the sales effort September 21st with a wall-raising ceremony on site. We're delighted to contribute to the fabric of downtown, Healy says. Healy says she's not ready to put a specific price point on the homes just yet, but sources have estimated the 1,700 to 2,284 square foot townhomes, each with a garage and a tuck-under tandem parking space, could fetch offers up to $700,000 or more. We're going to let the market set that price, she says. The first of the four buildings at Harriet Place is slated to be finished in February 2017. In restaurant news, Raleigh's Trip closes after a run of 40 years. The Trip's restaurant at Ridgewood Shopping Center, an iconic Raleigh restaurant that lasted 40 years, shuttered suddenly September 12th. Trip's, a product of the Fern Bar era, was a hotspot for singles in the late 1980s and then the 1990s, with young professionals jamming the bar on Thursday nights after watching Friends. Ridgewood Shopping Center owner Andrew Tetchett says he was not aware the restaurant was a closing until the day it happened. "We're sad they moved on. It was unexpected, and they left on their own volition," he says. "We're hopeful we can still part amicably. We are already working on finding a replacement restaurant." Wahlburgers coming to downtown Raleigh. A fast-growing franchise of the Wahlburgers burger restaurant chain has signed a deal to open in the heart of downtown Raleigh as early as next January. The Boston area restaurant that's a feature part of the A&E TV reality show series starring entertainers Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg, and their chef-trained brother Paul Wahlberg will be opening a new location at the Hudson Building at 1319 Fayetteville Street next to the studios at ABC 11. The space was previously occupied by the Oxford and British Type Pub. Landmark Restaurant in Carrboro under new ownership. The longtime owners of the Spotted Dog Restaurant and Bar in downtown Carrboro have sold their ownership in the business to a local restaurant veteran who plans to keep it pretty much as it is. Ed Corbell, the new owner of Spotted Dog, located in the triangle flat iron brick building on the island between Main and Weaver Streets, says they'll make a few changes to the menu and hours, but nothing major. Partners Linda Bourne and Karen Mills had opened Spotted Dog in 1998, named after their Dalmatian. In the technology section, Cree seeks to light up lagging bulb sales. Derm lead firm Cree has officially unveiled what it's calling a completely new portfolio of bulb products. Cree has zigged when the industry has zagged, Al Sariscus, Vice President of Marketing and Consumer Products at Cree, said September 13th in an interview following the product launch. He points to what he calls both better light and a better warranty associated with the new bulbs, which are developed, engineered, and marketed out of Cree's Durham headquarters. The new bulbs, according to Cree, meet or exceed Energy Star standards, with some products lasting up to 32 years. But can they really put Cree, which has seen declines in its lighting products revenue over the past year, back on an upswing? In August, the firm reported that its lighting products segment, which consists of LED lighting systems and bulbs, decreased 2% to $889.1 million in revenue in fiscal 2016. That represents 55% of Cree's overall revenue dollars for the year, a percentage set to increase when Cree closes on its sale of its Wolf Speed subsidiary. Angelo Zeno, an analyst at S&B Global, currently has a hold recommendation for Cree stock and calls the product announcement interesting. But whether or not the actual product offerings here are a game changer for the company, I think that's a bit far-fetched, he says. He points to LED adoption rates that, while they've doubled from 2 years ago, according to a recent survey by Orison Sylvania, continue to trail industry hype. The runaway for the company is still enormous. Here over the next 10 to 15 years, he says. Zeno says the bigger story will be whether Cree can pull ahead of its struggles over the past several months. And the company has a few factors working in its favor, such as an expected case infusion from the upcoming sale of its power and radio frequency division, also called Wolf Speed, to Infineon. And Cree could use the cash to push ahead in an area where Zeno sees even more potential than SPICE, smart lighting. 2017 is going to be an interesting year for Cree, he says. Cree CEO Chuck Swoboda has said repeatedly that expanding the company's smart lighting capabilities is a priority. Change salt. Eastern NC wants 200 Eastern NC wants 264 as interstate. The state is seeking yet another federal approval to designate an Eastern North Carolina highway as an interstate, a move that a top transportation executive says could kickstart economic development in the region. Specifically, the state is trying to designate U.S. 264 as a future interstate from the U.S. 264/64 split in Zebling all the way to Greenville. State traffic engineer Kevin Lacey says it's an economic development move requested by officials in Greenville. Lacey says many companies, when considering a place to relocate, look at proximity to an interstate. If it's a certain distance away, they'll automatically rule that out, he says. Lacey says that in order to bring the stretch of highway up to interstate standards, crews will need to make multiple improvements over the next two decades, including widening the shoulders and raising bridges. Some of the improvements can happen in conjunction with regular maintenance, such as repaving projects we do anyway, he says. The NC Department of Transportation couldn't provide an estimate on how much those improvements will cost taxpayers. In the section called Around the State, no championships. ACC decision on HB2 impacts Durham Cary. The Atlantic Coast Conference's decision to pull championship events from North Carolina over its dissent over House Bill 2, announced September 14th, is already making ripples in Durham, where the 2017 ACC baseball championships were supposed to take place at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Mike Burling, general manager of the Capital Broadcasting Company owned Durham Bulls, said in an email that he couldn't discuss details of the initial four-year contract the Bulls had with the ACC, nor would he say whether the contract calls for a financial consequence for pulling out of the deal. Quote, I will say that if there are, we would not pursue anything against them for making the decision, end quote. Burling said, we have been partners with the ACC since the late 90s and support the difficult decision they had to make. His comments echo a Bull statement which reads, quote, we understand the conference's position and support our partner's decision to remove those championships from North Carolina, end quote. The statement reads, quote, we look forward to a resolution of this issue so that we can welcome the tournament back to Durham in future years, end quote. DBAP hosted the 2016 ACC baseball tournament in May and attracted a crowd of 55,306. It was the 10th time the ACC baseball championship had been held in Durham and the second year in a four-year contract to host the event. In 2015, total attendance for the event was 64,140,000, ranked as the third highest in tournament history. Durham Mayor Bill Bell, who learned the news Tuesday from the Durham Bulls, said in an interview he was disappointed the event was no longer happening here, but I understand the ACC's position and am supportive of them, he said. And it's just one of the local events to be relocated after the ACC's decision. The ACC Women's Soccer Championships were scheduled for Cary this fall, and men's and women's tennis championships were supposed to happen in April in Cary. Also having a major impact on North Carolina will be the ACC moving its football championship from Charlotte. House Speaker Tim Moore, who supports House Bill 2, called the loss of championships very unfortunate. The truth remains that this law was never about and does not promote discretion, Moore said. We will continue to advocate that North Carolina is a great place to live, do business, hold events, and to visit. But Scott Dupree, executive director of the Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance, called the loss of NCAA and ACC championships events a major blow to the state. For the sports event industry in North Carolina, this event has been unprecedented and historically bad, according to Dupree. WFU to study what makes life well lived. Professors at Wake Forest University are looking at what constitutes a life well lived. Thanks to $4.2 million in funding, professors are studying eudaimonia. Let's say that again. Eudaimonia, Aristotle's term for flourishing. Their aim is to study the nature of human flourishing as well as the institutions, attitudes, and cultural practices that encourage it. An interdisciplinary intellectual community of scholars will explore the concept beyond the typical scope of how happiness is understood or used in everyday conversation. Research will come from a wide range of perspectives, including economic, political, philosophical, psychological, and societal. Opportunities for student research will be included, as will be programs, conferences, and on-campus speakers. The Institute began in June with a planning grant from the Wake Forest Office of the Provost that was followed by the Charles Koch Foundation's committing $3.69 million to support the Institute for the next 5 years. The Foundation is a charitable organization that supports a range of scholarly opportunities and research at U.S. colleges and universities. Another $500,000 in funding comes from Liberty Resources and Liberty Oil Field Services. Wake Forest anticipates additional contributions. The pursuit of, let's say it again, eudaimonia is one of the most important goals for humankind. James Otteson, professor of economics and executive director of Eudaimonia Institute, said, "The university says money from the program will allow the institute to support faculty and staff members contributing to the mission, so new hires may follow its mission. Some new hires may follow through the university, although the university doesn't have an estimate on the number. Policies and practices already in place regarding hiring university staff will apply to any new hires associated with the institute." In a section called A Better World, Growing Population, Nonprofit Guides Aids Durham Seniors. In Durham, the number of individuals aged 60 and older is expected to grow more than 40% to nearly 70,000 over the next 10 years. And coping with health care can be particularly tough on seniors. Working to help Durham seniors keep up with that change and live healthier lives is Senior Pharmacist, which begins operating in 1994 as a program of the Coordinating Council for Senior Citizens, and in 1998 became a separate nonprofit. In the fiscal year that ended June 30th, it served more than 2,200 people, up 15% from the previous year, and it expects its client base to grow by 9% this year, says Gina Upchurch, executive director and founder. Through collaborations and coalitions that focus on making healthcare more affordable and accessible, Senior Pharmacists help seniors with limited incomes pay directly for medicine after Medicare coverage. In clinical pharmacists, all trained in geriatric pharmacy, help seniors manage their medication therapy, and it provides community referrals and care management tailored to each senior it serves, as well as counseling on Medicare insurance. A key collaboration with the Geriatric Education Center at Duke University and the Triangle J Area Agency on Aging is working to provide geriatric training for new primary care physician, nurses, and other healthcare professionals, and to share best practices in geriatrics with primary care practices and community groups. Upchurch also co-chairs Partnership for a Healthy Durham, a coalition working on a range of issues, including making healthcare more accessible for everyone in Durham. That coalition is working on a shared resource directory with Durham's Partnership for Seniors, which also is working on a compendium for providers on best practices in the areas of medication management, dementia care, and transitions in care. Senior Pharmacist is also part of End Poverty Durham, which addresses the problems of poverty and structural racism. and it coordinates with the Derm Medicare Rx Network, which focuses mainly on making sure people understand Medicare and their Medicare rights. This is particularly important as the annual period for choosing Medicare benefits begins October 15th. Every year, Medicare benefits change, Upchurch says. People can save money tremendously and ensure they have access to providers they need by reviewing their options. Senior Pharmacist aims to match a challenge grant of nearly $50,000 from the Stewards Fund by raising an equal amount between September 1st and December 31st from lapsed or new donors on those making large gifts than in the past. Healthcare doesn't just happen in a medical office, Upchurch says. Your health is influenced significantly by your community. We need policies and procedures and systems that are set up to improve care for older adults. Disabled vets giving boost for homes. Advance Auto Parts has led the gift of $2.1 million to Building Homes for Heroes, money that will be used to build or modify homes for veterans injured in the Middle East. Advance has been a proud supporter of Building Homes for Heroes since 2011, said Tom Greco, president and CEO of Advance Auto Parts. One of the recipients of a home will be Marine Sergeant Christy Ennis, who was injured in Afghanistan and had her left leg amputated. Noteworthy, Bruce Foster, a local Mr. Handyman owner, and his team worked September 9th at the Coral Riding Academy in Cary to build a shelter for horses. The academy is a home for struggling teens and rescue horses. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, York Simpson Underwood Realty, in Raleigh's North Hills, filled 74 backpacks for the Guardian of Lithium program, which promotes the interests of children in the NC court system. Two Smithfield Chicken and Barbecue franchises have committed $20,000 over 5 years to the Me Fine Foundation. Lastly, Over the Edge returns this fall. The popular Over the Edge event in which people rappel down the 30-story Wells Fargo Capital Center in Raleigh will be held September 30th and October 1st. The event benefits Special Olympics. Keith Fishburn, president and CEO of Special Olympics North Carolina, expects about 200 climbers this year. Each person raises $1,000 or more. Over the Edge raises $177,000 in 2015. This year's top fundraiser will receive an extended mini vacation at the Blockade Runner Beach Resort at Wrightsville Beach. And a quick note, good news on median income. The U.S. Census Bureau's latest report on median household income shows remarkable growth in 2015. Better yet, income rose across all economic classes. Well, unfortunately, we run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast on our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Triangle Business Journal, please call 919-832-5138. Again, the number is 919-832-5138. I'm your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service.